Today on the Cameron Journal podcast, I am joined by Roger Friedman. My microphone is not close by. I'm joined by Roger Friedman. He's the author of a book called Erasing America, Broken Politics, Broken Country. It says here, Erasing America, Broken Politics, Broken Country is a compelling exploration of the current political climate in the United States. This thought-provoking book, penned by Roger Friedman, is dedicated an America a dedicated American and retirement wealth planner, delves into the alarming rise of socialist policies in Washington, D.C., and across the nation. It critically examines the actions of self-serving politicians and the media's role in promoting radical progressive agendas. And when I first got this press release, this is unusual for what I usually receive here at the show, and I responded immediately and said, "We do not agree on America's movement towards socialism. I could do with some more socialism in this country, but let's come on and talk about this." And so here we are, we have some great topics to talk about, but I'm going to first welcome Roger, and we're going to find out about him and his book. So welcome to the Cameron Journal podcast.
Thank you, Cameron. It's great to be here.
Yes, thank you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your book and how you came to write it?
Well, I'm a New York City kid. I'm the son of a dry cleaner. I grew up in Lower Manhattan. My dad's store was at Times Square. So I was a city kid whose mom passed, unfortunately, when I was 12. So I had to, grow up a little early and work for my dad a lot so I didn't get in trouble after school. Went to State University, studied political science, which was probably the worst decision in 4 years of my life. But I've since turned the corner. I've been in wealth management, retirement planning, retirement strategy for the last 38 to 40 years. I've built a very big practice there. I was with Morgan Stanley as a senior vice president of wealth management. And today I am now in Florida, still practicing my craft. And Erasing America is actually my seventh book. It is the first one on politics, though.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. If it's your first book on politics, what inspired you to try to take this on?
That's a great question. So, when I call it reading the paper, which is actually going to different media websites, instead of waiting for the New
Yes.
York Times or something to be dropped in my driveway.
Yes,
So
my paper is
I
now
heard
delivered by Apple News.
that, or Newsmax or Fox or whoever. So
Yes,
I'd
no,
be looking
yes.
at articles and I see things that I vehemently disagreed with. And as Ron White would say, I had the right to remain silent. I didn't have the ability. And I'd fire off an email to my sisters, my brother, my friends, saying, "Did you hear about fill in the blank?" And I kept doing that over and over. And it occurred to me, why don't I send a one-page memo to my friends and family, maybe every Sunday? And on one page, I'll talk about all the nonsense that I read about during the week. Well, it soon became apparent that I could not limit it to one page. So it became around 1500 words a week. And after about a half a year of doing that, my sister said, "You could turn this into a book," which never crossed my mind because I just wasn't thinking about that.
Right.
All my other books were on retirement planning, financial planning, things of that nature. So after around 50 weeks, I put it all together, got it professionally edited, and had a bunch of first readers look at it. And we released it about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, excellent. So there's a couple. Good, thank you. There's a couple things that I think topics that I definitely want to dive into. And I think start with the easy one and go from there. So let's talk about the America's slow decline into socialism. We could do, in my mind, with about five tablespoons of socialism in this country. And we have, some great programs that have alleviated the poverty and suffering of people, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, TANF, all this type of thing. Compared to our OECD peers, we don't have a social safety net, basically, compared to our other, wealthy nations. So when you say sliding into socialism, what are the concrete examples you find in the world that make it seem like, we're going to be distributing copies of Mao's Little Red Book tomorrow?
That's a good question. So when I listen to AOC and the squad members, I hear them vehemently denouncing capitalism. Even though they're earning $174,500 a year as congresspeople, and AOC is driving a Tesla, which I don't think you get to drive in a socialist society. And one of the things that I notice is that more and more of the regulations coming out of states have to do with how much you earn versus what you're getting in return. For example, in December, California's legislature passed a bill that going forward, a portion of your electricity bill will not be based on how much electricity you use. And I kind of scratch my head at that. I'm thinking, wait a second, I get an electric bill because I use this much electricity. Now it's going to be based on how much money you earn. Okay. And I said to myself, this doesn't happen in America. Okay. This is kind of like Elizabeth Warren. Billionaires should not exist. And then she goes off saying everyone should be equal. There should be equal outcomes of everything. And in this country, you have equal opportunity, okay, not equal outcome. For example, Ben Carson, who ran for president, brilliant neurosurgeon, African American. If there was systemic racism here, he never would have risen to the point that he rose to. Being head of, I think, HHS, Health and Human Services, under Trump.
Was
Tim
actually
Scott,
HUD. He was Housing and Urban Development.
a congressman of Florida, African American. There would be no African Americans in Congress or graduates of Harvard or Yale or Princeton if systematic racism was what they said it is. Okay. And as I listen to, what is going on in Congress, especially what is going on in the blue states of Illinois, in Seattle, in California, in New York, New Jersey, I'm really terrified by the turn that the country has taken, that they're abandoning capitalist principles, which made this country the richest country in the history of mankind and the most successful. You can't say that of Russia, Venezuela, North Korea, or Cuba. And Karl Marx himself said socialism is the path to communism. Okay. So it made me feel very, very uncomfortable. Okay. And I started writing more and more about it. Okay. You get the kids that are in college now, many of them say socialism is the way to go. Well, a lot of times their parents are the ones paying the $40,000, $50,000, $60,000annual charges for them to go to college. And they're all in favor, for those that have student loans, they're all in favor of President Biden canceling their student loan by a stroke of the pen. I disagree with this. I have a problem with everything that's going on here. How do you feel
Well,
about it?
so let's go through a couple things. So one, I would say in a manner of pushing back, when it comes to systemic racism, this is a fallacy that I think has come up a lot, that somehow a few bright names means that there's no systemic racism. That's a lot harder argument to make. When you go back to Thurgood Marshall, first Black Supreme Court justice, when he came up through law, systemic racism wasn't just a problem, it was codified in law.
I agree, but times have changed.
times have changed, but I think the issue that we kind of remember is we didn't stop redlining cities until the early 1970s. My mom graduated high school in 1974.
50 years ago.
Yes, and that seems like a long time,
It is
but
a
when you,
long time. Have
it
you
is a
been
long time,
alive
but
that
in the
long?
co not close, but not yet.
Cameron, you have not been alive for 50 years. Okay.
Not close, but not
Was in
yet.
high school 50 years ago. So I've
Yeah.
seen the change that you're talking about.
But that's also my point is we
Right.
still have people alive today for whom these policies were real.
Absolutely. Yes, we do.
That it, when so I when I look at it in terms of the human lifespan, I can say, yeah, it's for me sitting here at 35, almost 36 years old in 2 months, it seems like long, long ago and far, far away. But my father grew up in the Jim Crow South. He's still alive to he can go through the town he grew up in Tuscaloosa and say that was white only, that was black, all this type of. So
Absolutely.
it I think it is, I mean, so to say something, say something was really, a long time ago, to me is a little bit hard of an argument when we still have human beings alive who lived it and had that reality as part
It's
of
in
their
our
lives.
history, but it's not our current, excuse me, it's not our current makeup. There is no government policy that says racism is codified in law. It is not. It
Yeah,
used to be, I
and the
agree.
Supreme Court has said in 1976 that when it comes to, these sorts of policies, if it cannot be de jure, which is a fancy Latin term meaning of law, but it can be de facto, which is another fancy Latin term meaning the way things that are. And I think what's and your point that we have moved on and policies have changed and we've come a long way in that time is well taken and needs to be talked about more. I
So
have
let
this
me
issue
ask you
with
a
Gen
question.
Z when they t c complain about gender stuff and LGBTQ stuff and all this type of thing. I'm like, I grew up in the 90s when Matthew Shepard was dragged behind a truck by two mad dudes in Wyoming, and I grew up in Colorado, so it wasn't that far away. And that was a national news story for 6 weeks. When Ellen DeGeneres came out, that was a national news story for 2 months. We have come so far in a very short period of time. And so your point to say, yeah, we used to do that, times have changed, is a very good one. I think it's also important to remember we still live in the legacy of those policies. Like when you look
You're
at a map
absolutely
of
correct.
Chicago,
We
the
live in the
lines
legacy.
haven't moved, like the
We
neighborhoods haven't
live in the
moved.
legacy. And there are people in every single town that are racist. We
Yeah.
know that.
And bless their hearts. And I've always said, I don't mind if you want to go home and be racist. God bless you. But just when it comes to public policy time, we're not
Right.
going to be in that energy with you. But if you want to go
Right.
home and come be my guest in your own home,
In your
like,
four walls, but not outside. Exactly.
yes,
So
exactly.
let me
Yeah.
ask you a
I just
question.
want your racism to stop at your property line when your lawn ends. That's all I care
So,
about.
Cameron, here's a question. I've written about it and I've read about it. California is on the verge of reparations for African Americans for wrongs that have been done in the past. The numbers have been bandied around 300,000, 1,000,000, 700,000, all these kind of numbers for California that was never a slave-owning state. So I'm going
The
to ask
Compromise
you.
of 1850 expressly prevented that from being the case.
So I'm going to ask you, why is this so important to California now with a $68 to $70 billion budget deficit? And Governor Newsom, looking very, very nice in all his hair gel, saying everything is wonderful and we're going to do everything for everybody. And they don't have any money to do any of this except by keep raising taxes. And there's the exodus to Texas and Florida and Nevada because they have more rational tax policies.
I mean, I'm not going to pretend to go along and say what California is doing is a good idea. I don't live in California for a reason. And I've always said I could never live in California because I would never get anything done because all I would do would be driving to Sacramento, standing outside the state capitol, yelling at them at how poorly run their state is.
Okay, I get that. I get
And
that.
so I've never been a big fan of reparations myself. I don't think at this point in time it is germane to the discussion. I think that
Very
becomes
good
a
point.
financial race to the bottom. I think there's a lot of room for scam. And as someone who has like verified bona fide African American heritage, perfectly traceable, I have all the receipts and would be, you know, eligible for the check, all this type of thing. I don't think that's helpful. I would rather them put that money into things that would actually do good for the community at large. So rather than just send out money to people, have you considered actually doing something about LA's homeless problem, which disproportionately affects people of color? Have you build some social housing, build some mass transportation, finish your stupid high-speed rail line that has cost
They tried
billions
to
and
do
goes
a lot
nowhere?
of that, and none of it went anywhere. Their high-speed rail line was a disgrace. It
and
never
this is why I can't live in California. This is why I can't live in California.
I get it.
Because I'll be kind of like, there's other ways to help these disadvantaged communities.
But it's
with
not
those
by writing a
resources.
Check. It's not by putting money in their checking account every month like they did during COVID. The amount of fraud that of the COVID money was somewhere north of $40 to $50 billion.
But are we going to criticize the fraud in the PPP loan program, which was egregious? I mean, egregious. The way businesses used that was absolutely beyond the pale.
I agree.
I mean, and then that was, and the sad thing when you get in, and we're going to come back to capitalism here in a minute. Because when you get into these sorts of programs, there was a lot of people like your Tom Brady's and your Buffalo Wild Wings that took the money, didn't need it. That's the first problem.
They take it and they put it in money market or a CD to earn interest.
Right, yeah, which causes asset price inflation, all this sort of thing. And the other half of that that I think is most unfortunate is that a lot of those loans ended up being forgiven. It ended up being honestly a great social program for business. I mean, there's some old French socialists that would applaud us for how good government is doing handing
Yeah,
out cash to business in this
but
country.
remember one thing, Cameron. In the height of the COVID lockdowns, who was able to remain open? Home Depot.
Yes.
Sam's.
Yes.
Walmart. All the gigantic companies were allowed to remain open. All the mom and pops were forced to close.
No, and I will say, when it comes to the COVID, you know, lockdowns, all this type of thing, I have a lot of friends who are fellow business owners. And who were adversely affected. My friend Brady McSlane, who's appeared on this podcast in our fashion series, she's a bridal seamstress. And at the time she was working, she has her own shop now, but she was working in a shop at the time.
Right.
And, you know, she literally was, you know, was like, I, you know, not allowed to go to work because Denver went the lockdown. So not allowed to go to work, not allowed to see brides, get paid, do their dresses. Weddings were being canceled. So brides didn't, you know, weren't getting their dresses altered, all this
No
type of
wedding, no
thing.
dress. Yeah.
Yes, no weddings, no dresses. Ultimately, so I mean, so she literally went from earning over six figures a year to almost nothing in the blink of an eye.
Wait
And
a second. Over six figures is seven figures. She made $1 million as a seamstress?
No, six figures. I said over six figures. Yes, over six figures. She's only a one-woman operation. Over six figures.
It's low six figures. Okay.
She was, yes, low six figures. She was doing a nice, tidy $100,000 a year business in bridal alterations,
That's
which
great.
Is great. And
That's
so,
the American dream.
Yes, and so for her family, and at the time she was the primary breadwinner for her family, they went from a decent middle class lifestyle to zero overnight. And it was a huge scramble. And thank goodness, because she didn't have necessarily the resources to get a hold of this free government money sort of thing. Thank goodness for family and friends, because she has friends who are lawyers and other things that were able to stay open. Thank God
And
for family
Cameron
and
bailed her
friends.
out.
Me and Jessica and a couple other people, you know, thank God for family and friends who were able to be helpful. And eventually she was able to get back to work. But I mean, the simple matter is those were lost earnings that went on for months and months and months.
Right.
And research has shown that we probably didn't need to take the lockdown route. That's another podcast.
No,
if you want to go read
you're
about that,
absolutely right. That's about
I have
a dozen
my article
podcasts.
On our politicized pandemic where I go into the research on that. If you
Right.
want to go read about that, but yes, I mean we have these, you know, some of the decisions that have been made are not that great when it comes to free government money. I did a podcast on universal basic income. And I said, you know what? It's a nice idea. And I looked at the research. Sweden tried it. It worked great. Stockton, California, the city of Stockton, California, did a pilot program for this. The province of Ontario in Canada did a pilot program for this. And it was very successful. People were able to get healthcare, get housing, get out of a hole, all this type of thing. I think as a temporary relief sort of thing, it could be a nice idea. I don't know that it's a structurally good permanent idea. I do firmly believe people need something to do. They need a reason to get up every day and go do something, engage in something, make something, create something, earn something. The people
Let
need
me ask you a
something to
question.
do.
Let me ask you a question. Someone said to me not long ago, basically, many Americans are lazy and stupid. Okay. Look who they voted for, et cetera, et cetera. I won't go there whether or not that's genius or the opposite. But I recently read about programs in California. I think one of them was in Palm Springs, where there's a transgender mayor or head of the city council, I'm not sure which, where they gave about $1,000 a month to everyone who's transgender, no matter their income. So if they were transgender, they got money. And I said to myself, why on earth is this happening? Well, the mayor, it was important to him or her, I'm not sure, because that's their belief. And there are different places in California that were experimenting with, if you're transgender, you're going to get money. And my sense is this could have been more well thought out. Okay.
Well, my
You're
first
selecting
question is
a very
why?
small sliver of the population
Very
and
small.
saying, here's money because we believe you need it. And it's coming from the taxpayers because the
Right.
government has no money to give unless they take it from the taxpayers or they create debt, which is then paid off by the taxpayers.
That is the type of program that I definitely. I love the spirit. I love the energy. I don't know that government is the best institution for that sort of thing.
You're absolutely right.
I would
I
say if
think
we want to do
churches, for
that,
example.
well, I would say if we want to support the trans community, and I'm totally on board, I would say let's get the gays, the lesbians, the theys, let's have some fabulous fundraising dinners, let's form a new charity or in support of it. So, and let's do this at the pri that's something where I think the private sector can do very well.
Yeah,
Like
you remember
private
when those
philanthropy can
musicians
be
came
brilliant
together?
at that.
You remember when all the musicians came together after 9/11? There was like scores of music, famous Bruce Springsteen and all these, and they raised untold millions of dollars. That's something that could happen rather than the government saying we're going to give people money simply because they're transgender or something else.
And this is to say, and we'll loop back to capitalism on this. This is to say, there are times when, structurally speaking, government can do really great things. And I think one of the things that our government ha did well in the aftermath of the Depression is we began to put in place the things that mitigated the worst aspects of capitalism. And I think one of the major issues we've had in the last 45 years with the deregulation of Ronald Reagan, and I write about this in my essay, 1977, The Rise of Discounters and Deregulation, was that we undid the great regulatory framework that made the great American high possible. It was, yes, we'll throw out the regulations, yes, we'll lower the taxes, yes, we'll li liberate trucking rates and airplane fares and all these sorts of things, not realizing that the reason why we were able to have the wonderful life we did after World War II through the early 80s was because of that regulatory framework. And although I think some people described it, John Birch Society, other people, Koch brother, all this type of thing, the Federalist Society described it as socialism and practically on the road to communism, the reality is it gave the American middle class and even the working class the highest standard of living, the best lifestyle, and the most opportunity probably in human history. And my parents' generation, the boomers, benefited from the system that their parents gave them, and they've done very, very well. And no hate, bless them. They've done well, great, no hate, glad you did. But the unfortunate reality is, in the intervening time, the framework that allowed that to happen has been consistently undermined. And now we have a wealth inequality problem in this country that is starting to get very dystopian and starting to look Eastern European, South American. And it will not be very long in our society until we have cloistered communities of wealthy people with security and gates, and the great unwashed masses eking it out outside. And
Let me ask you a question.
that's the America we're careening towards, and that is a political powder keg waiting to happen.
Cameron, this came up last week in discussion amongst a group of people that I talk with. So you remember maybe, I don't know, 6, 7 years ago, Bill Gates built a gigantic home somewhere in the Seattle suburbs, maybe Bellevue, I'm not sure where. And it's, I don't know, 40,000 square feet, some outrageous amount of square footage like that. And, Elizabeth Warren and everyone else chimed in. Who needs a 30,000, 40, 50,000 square foot house? Obviously, no one needs it. Okay. But the thing that they totally glossed over was, well, the architects, the landscapers, the builders, the concrete people, all the people that worked on that house for however long it took to build. He created a massive amount of work in the community for hundreds, maybe even thousands of people, a huge amount of taxes to the community, and everyone benefited from it. And yes, he has an absurdly large house, and I'm sure that he could, ride a motorcycle, down the hallways. And it's not for me to say he shouldn't be able to. But I'm very, very happy that he had 700 workers, or however many it was, and he paid every single one of them. He created jobs. He shared the wealth.
Not very far. I
Well,
mean,
far. Well,
that's basically a great argument
he didn't
for
need the pipes made in Alabama, okay? So,
Right,
he shared them as far as it needed to build the house.
but that's also basically an argument for feudalism of the lord of the manor built a new manor and it's done very well for us. Here's what I would rather see. I would rather see Bill Gates pay some damn taxes in this country. He can have a 10,000 square foot house. I think he'll get along fine. And I would rather those workers be able, I would rather, here's what I'd rather do. I'd rather have middle class people have slightly higher salaries so they can go buy houses. So those workers, who are mostly independent tradespeople, will be able to build a long-term business building houses for lots of people. Because
Cameron, let me ask you,
that's the thing about money. When
why do you think
money goes
Bill
rich people, it
Gates,
doesn't move. It
why do you
stays
think Bill
in
Gates
a
gives
bank.
a
It doesn't
damn
go
what
anywhere.
you would rather see? He doesn't.
I'm sure he does not, and that's okay. I'm so sure he does not, would not ever
You'd
consider it,
rather
and
him
that's
drive an old Cadillac
fine.
than a new Rolls-Royce. I get it.
I mean, not necessarily. What I'm saying is, money is only useful
It's a
when it
tool.
moves. Yeah,
It's
but
nothing more than a
it's
tool.
only useful when it moves. Part of the
Right.
problem with having a society of incredibly, extremely wealthy people, that money's not going anywhere. You hope it moves when they die, but otherwise, that money is not really moving. It has no velocity. It's not helping anyone. Those 700 people, yeah, they built his great house. It is in Bellevue, Bellevue Heights, actually. It's about 45,000 square feet. I've seen it. It's really cool.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, no, it's really nice. It's very kind of bog standard American. They could have done more with the design, but it's fine. And that's all fine and well, but the reality is, once that project is done, those people need other projects and businesses to go on
In
to.
the
So
meantime, he's
I
paying
don't need
ungodly amount of
one,
taxes.
right? But here's the thing is, I don't need one Bill Gates. I need 10,000 people like yourself. Because the money, people like you who have businesses and employ people and all this type of thing, your money is moving. So we don't need just a Bill Gates or a Jeff Bezos or an Elon Musk. We need 10,000 of that talent making ever so slightly less money and having it move through the community. And that's one of the benefits of high tax rates in the 50s
Right.
at 95%. is it forced money to move because otherwise it went to Washington. So the system was designed such that it made people spend money, do R&D, do different things because otherwise it went in
So
taxes.
you said something that I'd like to expand on. You said money only has value when it's moving, when it has velocity. Okay. And I get that totally 100%. It
Especially
also
today's
has
inflation.
a lot of value when you tie a rope around it and you stick it right here. Let's say you have a $100,000 certificate of deposit. Okay. It's all your money in the world. It's FDIC insured. That is your security. That is your security blanket. Okay. It is very, very valuable to you, even though there's no velocity to it. Okay. It's, you take that 100 grand, it's in a metal cage, says JP Morgan or Bank of America, whatever the CD is, and it creates a lot of security for Joe or Martha or Bill or Patty. Okay. So money has a lot of use, even if there's no velocity to it. And that's by security.
But I would argue in your certificate deposit scenario that money has a little bit of velocity because the bank, in order to pay
Bank
the
is lending it
interest,
out, of course.
right? The bank, which is going to be paying a lot of interest right now, 5.5%. I was just about to take out a CD. I saw good interest rates at the credit union. that the banks, especially a small institution, is immediately going to lend that out, which is
Sure.
good news. Say I'm over here at Widgery Omni Media, and I need to take out a loan against my invoices. Not that I was doing my accounting this morning or anything, but say I need to take a loan against my invoices. Then that money is now moving. That's not necessarily true for, I mean, those shares that Bill Gates own in Microsoft, which comprise the bulk of his wealth, that money's not because, and here's the problem. If Bill Gates started to massively sell off Microsoft, the price of the stock would tank because he'd be
Oh,
releasing
wait a
too many
second.
shares
A
into the
lot
market.
of his shares, he has made the charity pledge. Are you aware of what that pledge is?
Yes.
Okay. So
Yes.
an awful lot, I think it's at least 50% of his
Right.
wealth will go to charity. And Buffett has already started doing that. Buffett's given billions of dollars of Berkshire Hathaway to Bill Gates charity for him to disperse.
And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation does wonderful and tremendous things. They fund a lot of people. I know a lot of people who have grants or in programs that are funded by them, all this type of thing. And that during the Gilded Age, we that built public libraries in this country. We want to know why there's a Guggenheim Museum in New York. Guess who paid for that? We want to know
Sure.
why there's a Frick
Go
Collection
to
in New
any
York. Guess who paid for
university.
it?
Go to any
Yes.
university, and it's the
And there's
Jones Library or the Smith
Yes.
Gymnasium. And that's because Jones got off his ass and stroked a $40 million check.
Yes, and depending on what part of the country you're in, you will sometimes see some local names. Like if you're in the right part of the country, you'll see a Whitney, same way reason there's
Yes.
a museum in New York. If you're in California, John Paul Getty this, John Paul Getty that, John Paul Getty the other thing.
Exactly.
I'm from Northwest Arkansas. Sam Walton this, Sam Walton that, Sam Walton the other thing.
Yeah.
But even regardless of all
Mellon,
that,
Carnegie, all of them.
yes, in Den, I come, I grew up in Denver. Betcher, or Anschutz. That's the other big one.
Spelman College,
Anschutz,
the
Anschutz, Anschutz.
historically African American Spelman College would not exist were it not for John D. Rockefeller.
Of course,
Okay.
and Oprah has given bucket loads to Morehouse for, she has a whole scholarship program for men at Morehouse. Absolutely. Yes, there's lots of,
But I think
and
you have a problem with the fact that they haven't given away 95% of their wealth yet.
I don't care about how much they do or do not give away. What I care about is that the reason this wealth is concentrated in their hands to start with is we have spent the last 40 years lowering taxes and rewriting the tax code to advantage wealth and assets and capital over labor. If you derive your wealth from assets and capital, you pay less taxes than if you derive your wealth from labor. And
Well,
I.
that is not so much regulation. That's the tax law that's created by Congress.
And I
So if
just said
you
we've
want to
spent the last
say there's
40
a
years
problem,
rewriting
Congress
tax
created the
law.
problem.
Yes, I'm saying we're spending the last 40 years rewriting the tax code and lowering taxes to create this terrible imbalance. And on not only would I like to see tax rates increase to where they were in the 80s, because we have a terrible debt problem in this country and we're out to pay for it sometime, might as well get to work. But we also have this very wonky tax code that has been
Cameron, we don't have a debt problem. We have a spending problem. We have a spending problem. The debt is now about $34 trillion. So you're absolutely right. We have a problem, but it's because the government will not stop spending.
And I'm saying the government doesn't spend nearly enough.
Okay,
compared to most other countries, we pay 180 degrees apart.
The sad thing in this country,
we pay a lot of taxes to a lot of taxable entities, and look how much we don't get. On aggregate, we're paying more for more than the Europeans for less services. You know, and even no, and no matter where you look, we're paying a lot of money to get less. Whether you're looking in taxes, healthcare, education, we spend the most per student per capita of any OECD nation.
We don't do a lot of things
our Tesco's
well.
Are lower.
I agree.
Per capita healthcare, we spend the most of our wealthy countries. We don't have universal access, and we have worse outcomes. It's actually better for a woman to go have a baby in South Africa than it is in the United States.
So let me ask you a question.
These are all problems we as a society need to solve, and it's going to start with raising some money, and to borrow the phrase of FDR, soak the damn rich to do it.
Cameron,
that's the simple matter.
The last time you paid your taxes, 2023, okay? Yeah. Let's just pretend it was April 15th. Let's say your tax bill was, pick a number, $6,800.
Yeah.
Did you give them an extra $2,000 because you know they needed it?
No.
Why not? They need it. Give them more money. The tax rate should be higher. You don't have to wait for them to raise the rate. Give them more money voluntarily.
I mean,
why
I kind of
do
it because I don't bother itemizing my expenses.
Why didn't you do
I'm
it?
Lazy. So
why didn't you do it?
Give the government free money.
Well, you know, if you had a tax bill of $6,800, why not just give them an even $10,000? You know they need it.
I could certainly do that. That's not quite
have
the
you?
Gotcha you think it is, though.
Have you?
No. I already said I do. I already overpay because I don't itemize my expenses because I'm lazy.
Right.
Like, I don't hire.
You have the standard deduction.
Yes, especially as someone who's self-employed, I really should hire someone to really drill down the tax bill, and I don't. I'm just like, give me my standard deduction. I don't want to do the paperwork. Let me give you your money, and I'm going to go on with my life.
You should hire someone, spread your wealth.
You know, you're absolutely right. You know, I really should. I was on with Rocket Lawyer the other day, and I said, I think it's finally time for me to hire someone to do the taxes, because I'm done doing it. And it's coming up this year, so I've got to think about it.
Okay.
Yes, no, absolutely. But that still isn't the gotcha thing. It's just relying. Here's the problem with that. Every time we try to solve a big systemic society issue by actions of individuals, be that Cameron giving free money to the government, which I certainly could do, or asking, you know, charitable organizations to solve society's problems, we're still stuck in this pattern. And this is where capitalism, especially late stage capitalism and neoliberalism, has been very insidious, is we're still looking at it's the individual problem, it's the individual responsibility, the individual must do it. We cannot solve our big systemic societal issues by merely asking individuals to try to fill in the gap. We've got to do it together or not at all. And I think one of the most terrible things that came out of the Reagan, Thatcher, Clinton, Blair era was a pithy quote from Margaret Thatcher, which said, there's no such thing as society. There's individuals, no such thing as society.
Everyone is self-interested. We know that.
Yes. But I think in that, within that self-interest, you can harness that for the good of society if you start building systems that advantage everyone and allow individuals to do good things. That was the flaw with the Soviet Union, is they completely bulldozed over the individual in favor of the collective. They took it too far. In the West, we did the same thing, but in the opposite direction. We pretended we weren't a society anymore and prized the individual, and we're now living in a situation where we have a nice cadre of about 20% of the population that's doing okay, while the rest of the 80% are figuring out how to buy groceries and pay the rent. And with a slight, not even a big rejiggering, a slight rejiggering of tax policy and regulation, we could get back to that place where we were after the Depression, after the war, where things are actually good for everyone, not just a select and lucky
You know, you
few.
should be very, very grateful, Cameron. Do you want me to tell you why?
Why?
Because if you said the same thing in the Soviet Union, you'd
Yes.
probably be in the frozen Siberian tundra.
Certainly,
Because you're
straight to
talking about
Gulag. Yes.
how government policies are not the best and you have a problem with it. And I want you to know, I would not have been able to write this book in the Soviet Union or North Korea or Cuba, I'd be in jail. And I'm very, very grateful that I could write this book and sleep well at night, that the Stasi or somebody else is not going to come barging down my door and rip me from my family in the middle of the night and take me to jail.
Right, but I'm not saying that a change in economic policy should preclude any sort of individual liberty. I would argue we've had more right to free speech in the past than we do to today in some cases,
I think you're correct.
given things that are happening culturally and socially that I'm not
Right.
always a huge fan of. And I've written about that extensively. I mean, I think, I think it was easier in the past to be, subversive and really, have more kind of freedom of thought. And I'm not saying that an economic I'm not saying that increasing economic security should come at the cost of any sort of personal liberty. We can have a wealthy, affluent, beneficial society that has healthcare available, has transit available, takes care of childcare, has great public schools, all this type of thing, without getting rid of free speech or freedom of religion or anything else. We can have both. And I know that because we had it. We've done it. This is America. We had that system in place, and Ronald Reagan and company came along and said, "You deserve more money. You shouldn't have to pay for all those people. You deserve to enrich yourselves." And they completely dismantled the pretty good system that FDR and company had set up. And the only thing I'm arguing for, and I don't pretend to answer for Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or anything else, I only answer for myself. All I'm saying is, let's pick out the best parts of the system we had between 1935 and about 1979. Let's pick out the best parts of that and let's implement them here today.
And who do you think is going to do that?
Right now, I don't think anyone.
I'll vote for you if you're going to do it.
And trust me, I mean,
If you move to Florida, I'll vote for you.
It's if I had a I had a staff member on a previous publication who asked me why I wasn't in charge of messaging for the DNC. He said, because he's like, the way you talk about this, everyone would vote for you. Like, you should run for office. I'm like, I would never do that. That I mean, that's economically speaking, that's all I'm asking for is we've created an individualistic, late capitalistic dystopia where we've advantaged a few over the many. And with an ever so slight readjustment, still having very wealthy people living in a very wealthy country, a slight readjustment would radically change the lives of people. And here's the best part. When the masses are doing well and we're in that mass affluence, they're going to need wealth management. They'll
So
buy
you're
my
going to say that
books.
Bill Gates won't miss a billion, or Elon Musk won't miss a billion because they have so many.
Oh my goodness, I think the vast majority of the 1% in this country will still be doing just fine. And I'm not even saying we need to go back to 70% tax rates like we had in 85. We could go back to the tax rates of the 90s and
So what?
probably do okay. Like, we don't necessarily need to really soak them. We just need to kind of soak them. And we could build a mass affluent society that would do very well. And I've always said, I would like the fiscal year budget for 99 2000. I want the defense budget to be about 600 billion, and I want
Right.
those tax rates. And I think as a society, we could do very well for ourselves on that basis. And your capital gains tax is only 20%. Your
So let
top
me
end
pick a
tax rates are about
scab.
40%.
Let me pick a scab. You have a lot of illegals coming in. You have a lot of the blue cities, the sanctuary cities, that are diverting funds that normally would go to the citizens, and they're diverting them to the migrants. Okay. So I read last week, and I can't remember what county it was. that escapes me. But they were lowering the hours at the Department of Motor Vehicles. They were closing a community center one day a week, and they were lowering other services that were available so that they had money to provide to migrants for food, shelter, cell phones, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, I saw that as well. And I don't remember where it was either.
I don't remember yes, I where saw, it
and
was.
And I was horrified. I'm like, why are you drawing down city services?
City services, yes.
Yes. I mean, oh my goodness. Like, that's
well, there
terrible...
wasn't enough money to go around.
Yeah. Yes. No, immigration
it was very disturbing.
Immigration is a subject in which I'm very conservative, and I've said this many, many times. I'm not a fan of illegal immigration in any form. I'm not a fan of how tech companies use H-1B visas to press down wages of American workers. And I would like us to have a robust, civilized, inexpensive immigration system. I think
you cannot have an inexpensive one.
Well, not inexpensive for us, inexpensive for the immigrant coming in. One of the problems with legal immigration is, by the money standards of the rest of the world, it's incredibly expensive to immigrate to America. Those fees should be tailored to the countries people are coming from. We're going to pay a lot of money, and that's fine. I think that investment in having a robust immigration system that makes it easy for people to come, go home, come and go, be temporary workers, all this type of thing, is by and large a good thing. I think preventing companies from abusing the H-1B visa system is a good thing. I think taking steps to mitigate the flow of people walking over the border, which these days includes Arab people, people from Africa, Chinese people,
there's
Ukrainian refugees
coming in,
people yeah. escaping Ukraine, flying to Mexico City, walking across the border. I mean, this is insane. That is worth the investment to bring to a halt, but it's never going to happen. Because as I wrote in America's Faustian Bargain with Immigration, there are far too many corporate interests who rely on that cheap and inexpensive labor.
Well,
and
Chuck
we
Schumer,
flow,
of all people, said last week
they will scream
that if we stop illegal immigration, who is going to pick the vegetables and fruits in a field? Americans will starve. When I heard Chuck Schumer say that, you know, it just solidified in my mind that the man is totally delusional. And the only reason New Yorkers send him to Washington, they don't want him in New York.
I mean, here's the sad reality is, ask every farmer in the Inland Empire of California how they get their vegetables picked, and they'll tell you. Call up, I'm from Northwest Arkansas. Tyson Food back in the day used to send vans down to the border to pick up migrants to go process chickens in Fayetteville. It was the worst kept secret in town. It was the worst kept secret in town.
Can't they pick vegetables using AI and chatbots?
There's, you know, it's kind of like, there are some really great vegetable and fruit harvesting machines that are coming down the pike, but we're not quite there yet. But yes, it would be, ChatGPT should get to work pulling some strawberries. Give itself some use. There's a couple other concepts in your material I sent over that are worth talking about, especially we've burned through 45 minutes. Yes. So some of these are funny, and I think it would be interested to hear you talk about them. One of your show ideas was, are Republicans fiscally demented? I thought that was interesting. Why is America being erased? Is a cure for our broken political party system even possible? Who's responsible for the dumbing down of America? What are the top 10 reasons to vote for a conservative candidate in 2024? And most ironically, my mother probably wants to know about this, is how to shut down your crazed liberal relatives.
So tell your mother very specifically to go to eocritic.com, like equal opportunity, eocritic.com. And all those materials, they can download them. I have quizzes. I have special reports. I even have videos. But your mother would love that PDF of how to shut down your liberal relatives at the next holiday dinner.
Yeah, no, yes, I'll have to send her over. But I mean, let's at a top level, let's think about this. Like, are Republicans fiscally demented? Well, yes, they started a war for 20 years and lowered taxes. Yeah, that's going to be a problem. And we're going to be, my generation will be paying that off for the rest of our lives. But not to be mean or anything, but I feel like this book, this talk, this whole thing is this typical sort of talking point of the country's going to hell in a handbasket. How do we hang on to the way things used to be
I
because the
don't think
country's
there's anything
changing and we don't
typical
like
about it,
it?
Cameron. What I wanted to achieve was to raise awareness of how bad bad has gotten. Okay. And many people, they go to work, they come home, they eat dinner, they play with the kids, they watch television, they go to sleep and they do it again. Okay. The next day. And they really have no clue about what's going on, especially in sanctuary cities or blue cities, however you want to label them. And what I wanted to do is just spend a moment or two making people aware, do you know this is happening in this country? Do you know that ranchers could apply for a loan, but only if they're a minority? Okay. If they're not a minority or they're not a woman, they cannot get the loan. Okay. And I remember something, equal protection under the law. The government cannot cherry pick who gets the benefit. So, Cameron, you like me, I'm a big fella, okay? And I weigh well over 200 pounds, okay? I don't see any grants coming to me because I'm fat, okay? Okay?
Certainly
And
not, yes.
I'm not going to ask for it. But the point is, because I'm white or I'm Jewish or I'm fat or I'm in Florida, I don't get money because of any of those things. Okay. You know, I'm Jewish. I want money from Egypt. They wronged my people for generations. I'm waiting for a check. I'd rather have it in gold based on my weight. Okay. I
They'll
wanted
get
it
right
rolled
on
up and I want it
that.
tomorrow. Okay. But it's not coming. So all I wanted to do was really raise awareness. And if people don't like what they see, let them get off their ass, become involved locally, you know, give to charitable or political causes that they feel strongly about. And on November 5th, get your ass off the couch and get up and vote. Because every
I mean,
vote
I'm
doesn't matter.
always a fan of people getting involved at the local level. I'm always exhorting people, please go to your city council meeting, please go to your local school board meeting,
School board,
fire
exactly.
district, whatever. I mean,
Yeah.
I'm all because more governance, and I even tell people, get involved at the state level. More governance happens at the state capitol on down today than ever happens in Washington, D.C. If you really want to change your community,
Right.
that's where you're going to need to
Start
start.
locally, grassroots.
Yes. And that is, and it doesn't mean it doesn't need to be a huge time commitment, but just get understanding those issues, getting involved even on a single issue or at the most simple level is going to do more good for democracy than almost anything else.
Cameron, I spoke with a young lady last week. She lives in Richmond, and I forgot the issue that she took. You know, a problem with. She called the governor's office every day for a year to complain about whatever the issue was. And I'm sure that the governor's office, all the staff know who she is.
Oh,
Okay. And
yes.
she is in their face every single day. How much good it did, I have no clue. But that's not a bad way to start.
No, I mean it can certainly be a way to galvanize people, to galvanize support, all this type of thing. And that's, I mean, I think that's, and I always say about this, especially with my younger, readers and all this type of thing. I said, you know what? Social change takes time. Political activism is very unglamorous. When I was part of the movement in 2012 to legalize cannabis in Colorado, and I said, you know what it was? It was standing in front of the grocery store every weekend for 9 months, gathering the signatures to get it on the state ballot. It wasn't fun. It was hot. It was cold. It was rainy. I mean, because we did 3 seasons, all of that. I said, it was hot in the summer. It was cold in the winter. It was not fun, but that's what it took for us to get this to happen. And all the work it took, even to get to the point where we were gathering the signatures to get it on the ballot, that was a whole thing of all of its own. So that's.
I hear you, and I'll take the other side of that argument. Okay. So the guy that's
I'm not saying that policy was good or bad. I'm just saying political activism is unsexy,
Oh
but
no,
it's
you're
vital.
absolutely right. But when it comes to legalization of cannabis, the guy that's working on the brakes on the aircraft that I'm getting on, you know, to go visit my daughter, the fella who's working on the elevator in the office building when I'm going on the 22nd floor, I don't want them getting stoned before they go to work because they're using their travel bong, you know, that they keep under the seat in their car, okay? I don't want the aircraft mechanic getting stoned, okay? And if he does it over the weekend in his own house, fine. Don't do it on the way to work because I'm on that plane.
Well, yes, I don't think anyone would argue with you about that. Certainly not myself. Okay. I'm right there with you.
You're going to think twice before you go in an elevator.
I already think twice going in elevators. I've met people who work on elevators. And I think, you know, and I think the whole, you know, a coffin on a string, let's go. That is kind of an odd contraption. And I've lived in tall buildings and everything. I live on the ground floor now for a reason. I just have to go up some steps. I mean, absolutely. I mean, but the point is social change takes time.
And it takes time, and you're right. It's unsexy. It's unglamorous. It's
very unglamorous. And whatever it is you're advocating for, I don't care what that is, because we can have robust debate. And we
make
can
the call, decide. Send the email, write the letter.
Yes, you know, find $25 to put together some basic yard signs, all this type of thing. That is a very important thing. And also when it comes time to, you know, choose representation, and I say this for, you know, those of us who are under 45, I said, you know how, you know, the reason why it's very hard for us to know other politicians, because we don't vote in primaries. You know who does? Our parents, because they know that if they get to pick the candidates for the general election,
that it matters.
They're going to get their, yes, it matters, and they're going to get the people they want. So yeah. If we want to seize power from these folks, then we have to take a similar strategy. The problem, and here's where you'll like this. Here's the thing. It's not necessarily something that makes for great content on social media.
Sure.
It's very important work. But it's not necessarily a fire TikTok or a good Instagram reel. So that, and I think, you know, there's too much complaining on social media platforms and not enough advocacy to go out and say, okay, let's try to make this happen. So I'm always encouraging people, you know, and giving them the resources. And
that's great. That's great. And I commend you for that.
Yes, and I'm working on a new course on civics to teach people how their government actually works, because people really have no clue. It's kind of sad. And so it's a very important thing, but I don't.
Do they teach civics in high school anymore?
No, they don't. Because it doesn't appear on the standardized tests. They only cover math and science. So no, I've met young people, like 19, 20 year olds, who genuinely can't name three branches of government. They don't know.
Wow.
It's frightening. But one of the, I mean, as we kind of come to a close, one of the things I don't, I guess, understand, and maybe this will be a good cherry on top of our little discussion, is why do you feel like America's being erased?
There are those in Congress that want to change the character and the structure of what made this country great. They want to see socialism replace capitalism. They want to see if you say something that they don't agree with, they want to be able to shut you down, whether it's your Facebook or any other kind of social media. I kind of like the First Amendment. Actually, I kind of like all the amendments. I like the second one. I like the fifth. And I'm a great believer in the Constitution, following the rule of law. What I've seen over the last 3 years in the Biden administration is the Biden administration running afoul of the Constitution, running afoul of the law. And in order to make sure that the laws are followed, someone has to sue somebody to stop it. I want government to follow the law of the land, which is the United States Constitution. That's my belief.
Yes.
Constitution isn't perfect, but it's as perfect a document as we have. Okay. I'm sure the Cameron Journal is up there. But I think the Constitution is a bit better.
It has been 250 years. Maybe it's time for an update.
Maybe.
Our original document was written.
That's why we have amendments.
Yes, I mean, but there are some people who would argue it's time for a total overhaul. We need
Maybe.
to throw out the old and bring in the new. Bring in something
Okay, is
new.
that through an armed revolution?
I don't think it has to be. State there. A lot of the states get rid of their Louis. The state of Louisiana has had five state constitutions. The
Well, you ever
states.
been to Louisiana?
Well, that one I'll give you. That one I'll give you. Yeah, 10 points to, I guess, 10 points to Roger. That's even not the best example. But it's, I mean, there's some people. I mean, I think I get a bit bothered when I hear people attack MLK for trying to be a founder of the country, or trying to have a second founding, or trying to fundamentally change things, all this stuff. Because I think not always, but by and large, change is good, including more people is good. Our original constitution did not have provisions for women to vote. I was three-fifths of a person, only for representation purposes. I couldn't vote. You
But
know, all this stuff.
now you're five-fifths of a person.
I know, I've gained two-fifths in 250 years. It's
Go have
crazy.
a party. Get some
I
get some vodka, you know?
Yes,
Celebrate.
exactly. Exactly. Yes. So I mean, I think there, I mean, there I'm and I'm not saying that I'm not saying personally I want to do a new constitution. I think with some modifications, what we got could work very well. Because I agree with you,
I'm
it's a
always
really good
open to
system.
change.
It's amazing it's held up this long. I think the
Yes.
founders themselves would be shocked. We're still using their system. But I do think it is time for big structural systemic change. What
Cameron,
we
let
have
me give
ain't
you a
working.
plug for Netflix of all things. So I watched a 7-part miniseries on John Adams.
Oh,
Okay,
yes.
on Netflix. It was superb. Get a hold of it, watch it. The acting is phenomenal. And I didn't know that John Adams and Thomas Jefferson died on the same day. July 4th, 1826, when the Republic was 50 years old. They were political, right? They were friends, then rivals, then friends again at their death. But it was such a marvelous telling of what was going on at that time. But the Constitution has provisions for change.
And I agree with you, but I think, but I if you've never gone and read the John Adams biography by David McCullough, I can't recommend it enough. It's on my official book list at the Cameron Journal. It is one of the most exquisite biographies of a founder
Thanks
ever.
for telling me about it. I'll take a look.
Yeah, I read it in high school twice, actually. And it impacted me at a very deep level, so I always recommend it. No, I mean, I'm just saying, like, on this idea, the title of your book is Racing America, on this idea that somehow we're losing something. I don't see us losing anything. I see us finally becoming, I think, the country we were really meant to be.
That's another 1-hour podcast.
It
I don't
is.
think we
I
could tackle
agree.
that today. But with 10 million illegals pouring across our border, I would say I don't agree with that.
I mean, the reality is, I do a talk for corporations called Our Changing America, and I talk about demographics and cultural changes and how, you know, things are shifting as the boomers retire and begin to pass on. We're moving into a society that's dominated by the cultural values of Gen X, Millennials, and Gen Z. And those are very different values than the boomers had. And there's a lot changing in this country. I think there's some great aspects to it. There's some not so great aspects to it. And I think we've been here before with the Italians, the Irish, the Eastern Europeans. If we were having this conversation in 1924, a year before we banned immigration entirely for the next 40 years, people would be saying the same thing. Oh God, the Europe is sending their worst dregs here, boatload by boatload every day. Stop the flow. You know, you it would be the same thing. And then we ceased immigration for 40 years. And, you know, we probably could do with that again. I think we need some time to kind of assimilate everybody and shake things out and figure out better ways of dealing with this sort of thing and navigating these difficult times. But I, like I said, my only thing is, you've been absolutely delightful, but I really struggle with this idea that we're losing the country. Because I just, are things great? No. Do we have a lot of things we need to work on? Absolutely. But I don't think we're losing the country.
I think we're circling the drain. I went through about 52 different titles for the book, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever done was mixing and matching titles and subtitles. And maybe I'll send you my list of 50 finalists, see if there's something there that interests you.
I
But thank
appreciate
you
it.
for a wonderful talk today.
Yes, well, this is the part of the show where we do plugs. So why don't you let us know? You already have, but do it again. Let us know where people can find you online, where they
Okay.
can buy the book.
So the book obviously is on Amazon. All books are on Amazon now. Erasing America, Broken Politics, Broken Country. My name is Roger Friedman, Roger with the D, Friedman. The website is eocritic.com, like equal opportunity critic. And you could sign up for a no cost monthly newsletter that I send out that has some pearls of wisdom that you might be interested in. Thank you.
And thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Cameron. Have a wonderful day.
That's all for this episode of the Cameron Journal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Visit us online at CameronJournal.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I love to talk to my followers and listeners, so please feel free to get us on social media at Cameron Cowan on Twitter. And we'll see you next time on the Cameron Journal Podcast.